It's Comedy at the Carlson Cast with your host, Vinny Paulino. Sitting next to him, as always, is Brian Ball. I am the completely immortal Nick Lavasser, and today we've got Paul Rodriguez. And now to send it over to your host, Vinny Paulino.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast, coming to you from the greatest comedy club in the country, Comedy at the Carlson in Rochester, New York.
Woo!
I am a little biased, however. There's some pretty good ones out there. Good show today, man. Paul Rodriguez is coming in. Never in my life did I think I'd have an opportunity to interview this guy. Very interesting character.
Yeah,
I should say.
I know.
Very accomplished stand-up comedian. In fact, he is number 74 on Comedy Central's all-time best comedians list.
Dog.
So that's a top 100 guy.
Yeah. What number are you?
101, apparently.
As far as anyone can prove.
That's a bold-faced lie.
101,000. I don't know. I feel like I could be on that list if I pay enough.
I don't think so.
Probably accurate.
I don't think your career earnings are enough to pay off anybody. Maybe a Burger King.
I have plenty of buy one, get one coupons at Burger King and some Bill Gray's laying in my car.
The only man who has a tab at Burger King, Vinny Paulino.
Yeah, you might be able to afford to have Lorne Michael, like, glance at you.
Lorne Michaels would never even look at me for a second.
He'd
be like, mate, do you fall down or anything interested?
As
a matter of fact.
He would say, that's all he'd say about you.
Yeah, which, you know, that's all he says about Eddie Murphy anymore either. So, you know, that's pretty good. Big show. Like I said, we're excited about it. Nick, are you excited to have Paul Rodriguez in?
I am super jazzed. I got a chance to check out a little bit of his stuff last night, and he killed.
That's great.
I'm excited.
I want to check him out this weekend.
I remember watching. He doesn't take offense to this, but I remember watching him since I was a little kid. Like, he's been a constant, you know.
Back in the 40s.
Presence. Yeah, back in the night. Back in the knots. He's been a constant presence on television and in American culture for decades.
Back in his old transistor show.
Hello there, Paul Rodriguez here.
He's selling lemons.
Yes, his show came on right after the Shadow radio broadcast.
He's not that old of a guy, but he's been around for a long time.
But, you know, that's why. It's like, you know, we always use the term legend, but the guy's kind of legendary.
He has some
big-time firsts, and we'll talk about those when he comes in here later. But until then, let's talk about some other good stuff. Let's talk about our sponsors. Oh, goodness gracious, it's Iron Smoke Whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to have to forgive me because I am losing my voice terribly. I've been a little under the weather this week, but I'm going to try my best here. Handcrafted in upstate New York.
You need more of that Iron Smoke Whiskey.
I'm telling you, it's like my spinach. Blah, like, blow me down, Olive.
That just might mean you're an alcoholic.
No. Stop confronting us with our truths.
Iron Smoke Whiskey.
I think you're getting Brian and I mixed up. Iron Smoke Whiskey. Applewood, available in Applewood Smoked Whiskey or Rattlesnake Rosies. Apple Pie Whiskey.
Oh my goodness.
It's all delicious. Try it out if you're at your local liquor store. If you're coming to Comedy at the Carlson, we feature Iron Smoke Whiskey in some fantastic mixed drinks. So.
And they are delicious.
Yes, it is. So let's keep it moving. What can I say about Sapori?
Oh, my God.
Nick, do it quick.
Put it in me.
Flavori.
Sapori, baby. Put it in me. That's how we do this now.
With the claps?
Yes, do it, Brian.
Okay.
No, Brian, do it.
I'm not going to say
Brian.
It. I'll
Brian,
clap as he says it.
I will get the Nerf gun.
Put it in me.
I'm going to isolate that and turn it into something
dancing
really dirty.
Monkey now.
Turn it into a GIF. Oh, my God. If you send me the video file, I'm pretty sure I know how to do that.
I think you're sitting at the computer where the video file is. I think you can probably retrieve it.
Consider it done, Nicholas.
Nice.
Sweet little immortal Mick. You're going to mess with Brian. But let's talk about what's really important. Sapori. Uh-huh. Cafe and catering. Available in the Powers Building Atrium. Monday through Friday, I believe, for breakfast and lunch. The Tennis Club of Rochester as well, and they will also cater your special event. And let me tell you something, Chef Joe knows what he's doing. At Sapori Rochester, find him on Facebook or Instagram, or even better, have Grubhub bring it to you.
And if you have them cater your event, either Vinny or I are guaranteed to appear.
Brian will be. Brian will show up at your event. I want to have nothing to do with you people. All right, next, Three Heads Brewing, Delish. What can we say about Three Heads that we haven't already said about the other two sponsors? We got to get original now.
It's great, great stuff.
We said that with the other ones, too.
Well, but it's still true.
Yes.
We have good sponsors. We have very good taste in sponsors.
Local, and it'll get you drunk. Oh, they've got the tropical kind.
Oh, yeah. 8.7. Had a couple of those sneaky buggers at the Super Bowl.
I finally just had one of those. Super Bowl night, actually. I had one. It's good.
You know what? I had Super Bowl night, and I brought it to a Super Bowl party with me because the good folks at Three Heads every now and again send me over a little something special. They say share it with Brian.
They give us a little sample taste.
They gave me a 40 of Imperial Stout.
Yeah?
Yeah, that made Tom Brady lose it extra sweet. I was, but let me tell you something. They make some great beer.
As if that moment could not be improved anymore.
They make some great beer. Three Heads Brewing. In fact, not only that, they also support local artists, local musicians. They have an artist in residency every month on Thursday nights. You can go to the brewery, Three Heads Brewing on Atlantic Avenue, and check out some really great music.
Delicious and philanthropic.
Find them on Facebook and learn a little bit more about what they do. And if you're coming to see Paul Rodriguez this weekend, order yourself a glass of the kind. You won't be sad you did. Last but not least, Nick, how's your vape dripping?
I gotta not vape and talk. It hurts. It's bad. Bad, but the good kind.
That's right. His vape is dripping bad, baby. BadDripLabs.com. Put it in you.
You can't through your vape.
No,
you can't do it for all.
That's
of
for Sapori.
Through your vape.
No claps.
I like the claps. Nick sold me on the claps. Everybody clap their hands. Works every time with this kid. You think you're the trained monkey, Brian? You think you're the trained monkey?
I'm not a trained monkey. I'm just conditioned to love the cha-cha slide.
Aren't we all, little Nick? Aren't we all? So Bad Drip must be over 18. Check out at Bad Drip on Instagram and try some of the great flavors they have available. Bad Blood, Ugly Butter, Farley's Gnarly Sauce, or Cereal Trip. And not to mention, they also have a little brand called Clown,
which is actually what I'm currently vaping. I like it a lot.
This stuff right here is called Pennywise. Pennywise, Dollar Foolish. That's what they call me. But let me tell you, you won't be glad you got some. Try it out.
That's not what we call you.
Pennywise, Dollar Fat. That's what they call me. So we're gonna kick it to our Bad Drip spot. We're gonna be right back with the I don't use this term lightly, legendary Paul Rodriguez. Stay tuned.
Legendary.
Thanks for watching Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Be sure to like us on Facebook so you can keep updated on all the cool stuff happening here. And if you swing over to Twitter, be sure to give us a follow so you can keep tabs on who's coming to town and whatnot. Now let's send it back over to your delightful host, Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Goodness, I am thrilled to have our guest in the studio with us this morning. He is going to be doing 4 more shows here at Comedy at the Carlson. You get your tickets right now. Ladies and gentlemen, comedy legend Paul Rodriguez.
Woo! Comedy old guy, you know. But yeah, it's nice to be
here. You're a legend. You can wear it proudly.
Yeah, I've hung around some legends, you know. When I was coming up at the Comedy Store, that was really the heyday of the Comedy Store. It was like Mecca for comics. Mitzi Shore, the owner, Pauly Shore's mom, would house the guys with Promise right above the store. She had a house there. And at one time, I was roommates with Dice Clay, Sam Kennison, Carrie, Jim.
Okay, so if you live in an apartment, hold on a second here. You lived in an apartment with Sam Kennison, Andrew Dice Clay.
You must have played a lot of board games.
Who buys the toilet paper? How did you guys work that out?
Well, yeah, they had a maid that came in and put that stuff, but it was a madhouse. There was always girls, and it was always noise at all hours of the night. You know, at the time I would complain, but looking back on it, man, I was a lucky dude. It was really a lot of fun. There was mountains of coke, and everything. How we survived and reached our old age, some of us did anyways, is amazing. You know, you think back on it, go, it's all hazy now, you know.
Yeah.
But it was quite a time then, quite an interesting time. I was working the parking lot at the Comedy Store. That's where Mitzi had me. And at first, when I had audition and she accepted me and gave me the job as a parking lot man, I thought that was a racial thing. You know, Mexican,
bit on the nose.
Turned out to be the best job because all these celebrities, Steve Martin, Pryor, when they hand you the keys to their Rolls Royce, they want to know everything about you. They want to know your name, where you're from, who are you, and
copy of your ID in case you take the car.
I got a job driving Richie around, and something that I cherish. I mean, next to, you can't get any bigger. There's others that are of his ilk, but they just don't come any bigger than Richard Pryor.
No.
I drove him around, drove his car around for about 6 months or so. It was great.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah, what do you have, a roller, I bet, right?
He had a lot of things, but the one I liked was this Corniche. Just a beautiful
thing. Those are gorgeous.
I remember one time he was about to go on, he goes, give me some Marlboros and Red Box. And I went down to the down Sunset to a Pink's. It was a store, a liquor store. They didn't have the box, and I wasn't going to get him just anything. He said box, I was going to get box. So I went back, I took his car, and I drove it around. We up and down Sunset, man. You never see women just respect you. You know, they don't even know what hookers wanted to jump out of the car. I'll do you for free, baby. And I don't have time for you, but I went, got him he gave me a $100 bill, and I hadn't seen one in a while. Ever really, and I gave me a $100 bill. I bought two cartons, two packs of Marlboro Reds and a lighter, and I gave it to him. And here's your change, and I'm counting it out for him. And he goes, "It's yours." And I said, "But you know, you gave me a $100." He goes, "I know what I gave you, motherfucker. Anybody tip your ass before?"
That's great. Well,
you're not gonna, keep it.
Not that well.
Yeah, well, I had gotten what we were making. Mitzi was paying us $15 a night, something like that, you know. And I'm sleeping in my car. My parents are mad. I left college, but I would have left anyway. Whether I made a dollar or not, it was just exciting to me, you know, to all of a sudden in the flesh touch people that you've idolized, you know, and that happened to me, man. I felt like, wow, I was the luckiest dude, and I was making no money. I couldn't explain that to my parents, you know. I go, hey, but Richard Pryor, you know what I'm talking about? They had no idea. They only watched channel Spanish television.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know who it was. I remember, John Lennon. I mean, the who's who would come to the store. I remember John Lennon one time.
What years was this?
Oh, I'm talking about right before the strike. We're talking about 79, 78. I got out of the Air Force in 77. That was my second year in school, college. And yeah, it was about 79, 80.
Yeah, so that was right in the heyday. I mean, that was the freaking place.
It was. There was just no other. That place was, if you were working at the Comedy Store and you got a, you were working the main room, if you got a spot in the main room on a Saturday or Friday, you were you were one of the hottest guys there. I mean, she would only put A-liners. Look, for $5 in 79, 80, you could see a show that would have David Letterman as the host.
Forgive me, I'm going to hand you this. Would you mind using this one? There seems to be a problem with that.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, no.
Hello, everyone.
Hold on one second.
What's there?
Oh, my God. For the love of Pete.
Poor Pete.
Try that, Mr. Rodriguez.
And that's what happened. I've got nothing else.
Oh. That's it.
Everybody wonders why I was quiet for so long. It's because Mr. Rodriguez was too quiet.
I just told one of the most hilarious stories. I mean, this story, I couldn't repeat it. It was just funny. You know, it only happens once in a lifetime. And
I'm a better person from hearing it. Thank you.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
One guy heard it.
I very much enjoyed it.
Two guys.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was some seriously good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously good stuff.
Now lost to posterity. Well,
let's move on. Moving on. So I have to ask this question. You were born in Mexico.
I was.
You came to Compton. You went to L.A.
No, my trajectory is like this. My father, I was born in Sinaloa, Culiacan, the hotbed of narco trafficking and all that. My father didn't want his children to wind up doing that. So he had there was a brother that I never met who passed away because my dad didn't have 20 pesos for the vaccine or some kind of medicine. And my
You're kidding me.
Wow.
Yeah, my father took it so hard. He said that any country that would let a child die for 20 pesos didn't deserve his children. And we hopped on a train. I could barely remember. I was two, maybe. And I remember the train, and we just came to the border, and my father got in line at the embassy for days and days and days, and yes, we crossed legally. And then we just followed the harvest. We were living like what we did, migrant farmers. We'd follow the harvest from El Centro, picking asparagus. And, I mean, I was a child. I don't
sure.
Tell me this.
Yeah.
But I grew up basically on the road all the way up to we'd end the year in Bremerton, Washington, picking apples. We'd go to Minnesota picking sugar beets or whatever it is. Now they got machines. But the thing I remember the most is my father's optimism. My father was like Fred Cramden, you know, like from the Honeymooners, you know.
Yeah.
Get on the phone. I'll tell you, one of these days, we're going to get tomatoes. They're 5 cents a tomato. If we really work hard, we're going to get this money one day. We'll have our own little farm, and things are going to get better. And, you know, and then a tractor ran over him, and he broke his back, and
oh,
a lawyer screwed him out of I think they paid him $5,000, which was a lot of money then, but it wasn't enough.
That's a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah.
The kind of pain he went through. And I that's what made me want to be an attorney. I said, you know, one day I want to be an attorney, and I'm going to find this son of a bitch who stole my father. And, you know, I had this vengeance in my heart. And so, you know, I...
That's what everybody wants is a spiteful lawyer.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to be the defender of the faith, man. I was going to be, I knew Cesar Chavez when I was 12 years old. I had no idea he'd grow up to be the kind of man he is, but we stayed in touch. He came on my show. I knew him. I am Forrest Gump. I've met people. I remember Robert Kennedy marching with him. I didn't know who Robert was. I was a young kid, and I knew he was something important. People were taking pictures. And the March of Delano, when the grape strikes, the strike for the grapes, and... So I've been in important Mexican American history. I've been there. I've witnessed it. And then you know went to my father's injury. He couldn't work no more. So we went to live to an aunt of ours in East Los Angeles. And when she got kind of tired of all of the kids and everything like that, my father suffered the indignity. We couldn't find a house anywhere else. So he read in the paper there was a house for $60, I think it was, and had four bedrooms, and he thought that the Virgin had answered his prayers.
Right.
It was in Compton. It was, a month later, Dr. King, 68, he was killed, and the whole place exploded, and burn, baby, burn, and all this other stuff. And we didn't even know English all that well. We didn't know what the hassle was. And my father, I remember him saying, put the sign, say that we're not white, get on the roof and burn our house.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't know. I said, put we know why. We know why. We know. I'm trying to say we're not white, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're Mexican, and we're out there. And I have met some friends there in school, and they didn't bother us. They went on. Later, I found out the reasons why. I didn't know Dr. King was or anything, but we got a quick education. I went to Ralph Bunch, and I became friends with some people. Made it all the way to Major Leagues. Kenny Landro from the Dodgers was a teammate, a schoolmate of mine, and. And I was the white guy. I got pictures of me being the only white guy, and I'm Mexican. I'm saying how black it was, but you know,
close enough.
In hindsight, it taught me how to jive, how to play the dozen, how to talk, how to learn Ebonics, and I owe a great deal to the fast talking, the jiving that went on. And recently, there was a documentary called Streets of Compton. I think you still find it on A&E, I think it was. And out of all the rappers and all the Ice Cube and all those guys, they put me in. Because, I mean, Compton now is predominantly Mexican, really. And some people were surprised. Hey, man, aren't you from East L.A.? Well, I was in the movie Born Again, in East L.A.
Yeah.
But I'm really from Compton and west of Fresno. And make a long story short, when I got into this business, God or Providence, whatever you believe in, smiled on me and And I got a hold of some money thanks to Norman Lear, and I bought the ranch that my folks used to sleep in the barn and stuff. And I bought my mom 40 acres, the house where she was the maid, and I gave them the deed. It was, without question, the happiest day of my life.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty sweet. Yeah.
Every son wants to do that for their mom.
What did your I mean, like, how did your parents react to that?
Well, at first they thought I was slinging drugs, you know, because I just...
Because they still didn't understand what it was you did for a living.
I remember when I got the Tonight Show, and it happened for me relatively soon, about 8 months, maybe a year, under a year.
So wait a second. Can I backtrack real quick? How did you first, like, actually skit on stage? Like, how did you decide that's what you wanted to do?
Well, it was decided for me. I had a teacher in Long Beach College, where I was trying to earn a bachelor's in English and then go on to law school. I was a veteran, a minority, so yeah, I got some special.
We should add.
I was smart enough, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'd have gone in without no special privileges, but, you know, the privileges were there. I took it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
You would too, anybody would. So
right.
I went there, and a counselor said, well, I wanted to be a trial lawyer, and he said, well, it would be good if you took acting classes, because basically that's what trial lawyers do. They act in front of 12 jurors. They convince them that even though they got video of your client stabbing somebody in the head, he couldn't have possibly done it. You know, you act. That made sense to me, so I took some acting classes, and it just so happens that this casting lady came looking for a guy named Jose Perez, who was an actor there that had been on his third year, I think, in... When she asked for Jose Perez and he wasn't there, I said, I'm Jose Perez. And who do you want me to be, lady?
That's some really early identity theft right here.
Yeah, exactly. And Joel Schumacher later on became a big-time director. Still,
oh,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
He had written Car Wash with Pryor.
And, you know, I forgot he was involved in that.
Yeah, he did. And a friend of mine, I didn't have no car, took me down there. And I just jived my way into it. I had no agent, had another. They said, who's your agent? I said, Allstate. They laughed, you know. And they gave me this thing to read, and I looked at it, and I didn't think those lines was funny. And so I did my own character, and Joel Schumacher said, that's funny. He was a gigolo, kind of wannabe gigolo guy. So
right.
I know this character. I used to do that in school to pick up girls. He was, mamita, yeah. I started talking, and... Then next thing you know, he gave me the job, and I was in the movie. I just did it because I think they paid me $35,000-$40,000, which was a lot of money. I was working at a furniture store. I'm trying to, you know, and somebody gave me $35,000-$40,000 to hang out with Mr. T and Gary Busey, and he treated
yeah.
me. I said, yeah, man, where do I sign? I did the movie, then I went back to school.
Hanging out with Gary Busey, that's yeah. another mountain to cover.
That was another story, too, but we'll leave that alone. You can surmise. And I went back to school, you know. Had that movie bombed or not? Nobody seen it, I'd have passed the bar, and I'd have been a tort lawyer or a personal injury where the money is. But the movie was a hit, huge hit, and then it became... People started recognizing me. Like, I don't know. I hadn't even seen it, you know. I forgot all about it. I'm out there in the library trying to... catch up on my work, a lot of reading, you know. It wasn't even my language. I'm trying to learn to control my accent and doing a lot of locution and things. And girls all of a sudden were like, hey, I saw this movie. You look exactly like that guy. You sound like that guy. And if I would say, yeah, it's me, they'd say, nah, it isn't. And if I said, no, it's not me, they'd go, it is you.
So you started this, ma'am.
So I couldn't win, you know. And it became very disruptive. So there I was. I was, well, about a week of it. The movie was a huge hit, and it was just annoying for me. And this guy, who later became president of Columbia, he was working for Ray Stark Productions, comes up to me and he goes, are you Paul Rodriguez? And I go, yeah, but listen, man, I got a lot of reading. I'm way behind. He says, I come from so-and-so, he told me, Ray Stark Productions, and Kevin Bacon is doing a movie, and he saw you, and we'd like to read you for it. I go, dude, I'm not an actor. I'm studying here. I did that movie, and it's been a pain in the ass. You know, forget about it. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, but, you know, I was being annoyed, you know. And the guy said, well, you know, we'll probably get you $300,000, $400,000 for it. And,
oh, my God.
And he got my attention, you know, because my folks are living in Compton, a lot of crime. I was afraid for their safety. And
Hey, Paul, I'm getting a couple. Would you mind holding your mic up just a little bit closer? I'm sorry.
Yeah, entonces,
I heard $300,000, and I feel like
$300,000.
Nobody wants to miss that.
So I went to read for this movie. It was called Quicksilver. It was about these bicycle messengers.
Yes, I love that movie.
And
of course
and
you do.
And
he's a bike guy.
It was popular, and tell a long story. I got the money and bought my folks a house, and 2 months later, I'm broke, and I missed my school, and I don't know what to do. So I talked to a teacher, and she said, "Go to the Comedy Store. Go to the Comedy Store in Westwood, not the big one. You know, go to the Comedy Store and audition on Monday nights." I said, "Good." She told me about the Comedy Store. I don't know anything about stand up, but you know, I'm desperate, and they say if you do 5 minutes and if you're funny, you can get a job there. And boy, God knows I need a job.
So just for our listeners, though, if you are thinking that comedy is a way to make money quickly, probably not.
Those are different days.
You know, if somebody would told me how really difficult it is, what your odds are,
yeah,
I'd have never tried. I would have said, nah, man, I'll try something more.
You know,
more sure.
In today's day and age, the fact that you had a movie credit, you would have probably bumped to the front of the line on a lot of people.
No.
Back then, was it the same? Well, this day and age, you might.
Maybe. Back then, there were the guys in line with you were future big stars, you know?
Sure.
And they were very funny, and they knew what it took. And I went over there, and I saw them work, you know? And I go, wow, now that's funny. What am I going to do, you know? But there were no Latinos at the time, and that made me, you know, that made me stand out, you know? Freddie Prinze had died. He was my personal comedic hero, but I never really thought about being a stand-up. I don't know what that was. I was going to be a lawyer. I still had that vengeance in my heart, you know. I went over there, and I hadn't prepared no material, but the police, that week, the big story was a case named Beulah Love. She was shot by two Los Angeles police officers. She was holding a butter knife, you know.
Oh, no.
And they shot like 28 times, you know, and they were questioning it in the paper. Was this excessive? Was this excessive force? And I said, well, I don't know if it was excessive, but shit, they had to reload. So, you know, I said, they should be fired for being such bad shots. You know, I mean, if you're a man, you can't control without killing this woman with a belly club or whatever it is. I know I could do it, you know, in
right.
my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it caught the attention. People started laughing. Then guys came up to me and said, where are you from? Where you been? Yeah. I said, well, what? He goes, it's good. So I got the attention of the manager there. I forget this guy. I forget his name. He was very instrumental. And he says, no, man, you're advanced. You don't belong here. You go down to the Sunset. I went over there, tried to audition. I couldn't get on. The lines was extremely long. So I couldn't get on. But at this time, I couldn't go back to college. So I just started to, I went down to Olvera Street, this place in Los Angeles, and I started to do comedy in the streets. I went to Venice Beach. But there were so many
just
other
like
guys.
Just like busking?
Yeah, so many other guys. Oh, they're working, so I'm in a terrible place. I can't start school. My father's upset that I've thrown away this opportunity. My GI Bill wasted.
So, your dad, like a guy who's a migrant worker, working hard, but you bought him a house.
Yeah.
He can't be that mad at you at this point.
Well, he was because he never...
How are you living in your car if you bought him the house? That's what I kind of want to know.
Easy. After taxes, $300,000 ain't that much. Your agent gets a cut. By the rest. I was broke. I was flat broke. And it was, you know, I had to... People would recognize me, but movies are different than television. Television is immediate. You're on there. Movies, after that goes, you know, the fame kind of wanes, and people don't recognize you. You're different. And it was a difficult time there, but I had no choice. I couldn't go back and I couldn't go forward. So I, luckily enough, there was a nightclub where they were hiring for these strip dancers, you know, and they needed an MC. And I went over there and I talked to this Armenian guy. He later served time in jail.
Always an Armenian, isn't it?
Yeah. And he said, yeah, you're that guy. I pay you. And I said, look, I need to say, I pay $300 at night. A night, that's good money, you know? So I went over there and I would be the guy out there going, no, here he is, Spider-Man, ladies, give it up. And all these women going crazy. I was getting laid a lot. The money was good.
It's amazing, like, you know, how good you look.
Like that. And then I talked to Osco, was his name. They did the movie Fridays there, if you look at it. Osco, it was there, and then... So I convinced him to turn the bottom bar into a comedy club, and I make that my showcase. I started doing this. I started to get a name. People started coming in. I started to get charged. I was making money. I realized that if I didn't do something with this fame right here, I was going to blow it. And I wanted to go to a comedy store. That's what the big leagues are. I was in the junior leagues out here.
Right.
So I went out there and I started inviting people. And then a guy, Skip Stevenson, who was in a popular show there with Byron Allen. There was a show, it was called...
I remember Byron.
It was kind of reality.
God, I have
reality
not heard
show.
That name. And
Byron Allen still has Byron stand-up Allen. Specials, yeah. Doesn't he?
So they said, man, can you put in a good word for me and Missy? So they told me about an audition. I go over there, and I got hired over there, and I went back to say goodbye to Osco, and he's pissed off because he was making money. He goes, you're crazy, kid, you're crazy. You're making money here? You're going to... She paid $15. $15. Is it about money? I'll give you more money. And I said, no, man, it isn't about money, and I am grateful to you, but I can't go to where I'm going from here. The road to where I want to go doesn't go through this place.
See, that's amazing. A lot of people would have stayed there and taken the money.
Well, it was tempting, man. It was tempting, but... Yeah. But I wanted to be in the major leagues, man. I would go to the shows over there, and I would see... Man, I would see like Robin Williams, the late great Robin Williams. Damn, I miss him. He was such a good friend. I all the big names up there. That's where you want to go, man. That's where you want to shoot for. You don't even over here. What the hell with the money?
Oh, that's so, you know,
quit all that.
In a lot of ways, that's really inspirational. You know, there are big leagues and little leagues in comedy. There really are. And
once I got into something, I wasn't going to let go. I've gone this far. I gave up this career. Folks are mad. They own the farm, but if they don't have the money for the taxes, they're screwed. A lot of responsibility. Then I had a child come in. I met this girl, and she got pregnant with my son, Paul. And, I was 30 at the time, and I got out of the Air Force by the time I was 27 or so. I was going to college. My life was in change, but I had come this far. And even though Oscar was mad at me, and later on he sent me a letter when they did the Tonight Show, and it made me feel good because I wanted to, I'm not an ungrateful guy,
Sure.
I mean, he did a lot for me. So I went over there, and then you go from being the big fish in this small bowl to over there where there's whales, and you're going, but somehow you're
plankton.
You get out there, you get out there, and I would get out there on the main stage, and I just started to do my thing. I just started, I did the Mexican thing, which I'm still doing. I made my bed. But the reason I did it wasn't that I couldn't talk about anything else. It's the only thing that would stand me out, There were other guys, that were doing the, hey, how you doing? You seen this? Leno and all that. They were impressionists.
Everybody had their own thing back in those days.
It was like the WWF. Everybody had a gimmick.
Yeah.
I needed to stand out. So the Mexican, it was a novelty.
Right.
And I started doing that, and one thing led to another, and next thing you know, I'm in Rochester talking to you.
Yeah, what a shame. Now, now you said earlier, and I want to jump forward in the story, because that's a lot of history right there to learn about where you're at. And when you get to the Tonight Show, like you're doing stand-up, how long did you say, 8 to 10 months that you got to that main stage before you got the Tonight Show?
Yeah, the Tonight Show was after Norman Lear gave me an opportunity to do a series, A.K.A. Pablo.
So, not
a lot of people can do that sentence. Norman Lear gave me an opportunity.
Well, no, it's...
right.
This is a story. There was a common joke going around that the waitresses would always tell the comics. They go, hey, Spielberg is here to see you. You go, it's a joke, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck off. And I remember this particular waitress. She said, I got a note from Norman Lear. I had sucked that night, too. It was okay, but usually I was knocking him dead.
Right.
For some reason, I didn't do as well as I thought it. And she goes, hey, Paul, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go home, sleep. But she goes, there's a note. Norman Lear's out there. He wants to see you. I said, thanks a lot, Sherry. I think it was. Thanks a lot, Sherry. Kick me when you're done. He goes, listen, look at me. This really is Norman Lear. Look at behind him. That's him, and he wants to see you. I said, I'm not going to go over there and tell him. If you bullshit me, it's going to be very embarrassing. She goes, it's up to you. If you want to go, then go. And I said, if I go over there and Norman looks at me, who the fuck are you? I just sucked, and I'm gonna feel really bad. But if
no
I don't
tip
go over
for
there,
you,
but if I don't go over there and he really does want to see me, I'll never
could
get
change
this
your life.
Again.
Yeah.
So I figured, fuck it, let me be embarrassed. And I went over there, and it sure was. He did want to see me. Sit down. He would talk to me. He gave me. He was like, Carol O'Connor is sitting next to him.
You're kidding me.
Jesus.
And I'm going, oh man, I'm impressed, and he gives me his address. He tells me that he's got his office in Tandem Productions, and for me to go see him. And I get a job doing warm-ups. I didn't get no TV series. I got a job doing warm-up for
right.
for Sally Struthers and her show, Gloria, and Burgess Meredith is there, and in between their
that was the spinoff from Archie Bunker, right?
Right, right. Yeah. He was a veterinarian, you know?
Yeah.
And it lasted a couple of seasons, and I got paid $600, and all I had to do was go out there and make the audience laugh in between the things, and I started to get big laughs, you know, to the point where I got noticed, you know? And she gave me my first acting little piece in the series. But I caught Norman's attention, and he wanted to talk to me, and I explained my situation. And then they developed A.K. Pablo. And although the movie didn't succeed, the man gave me $3.5 million. I went from...
Ooh.
Yeah, think how I said, woo.
Okay, so hold on a second.
Now you got
I just want to understand the timeline here.
Yeah.
Because this is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Sleeping in your car,
yeah.
driving Richard Pryor out, getting yeah. cigarettes for him.
Yeah.
Within 10 months, you're on The Tonight Show.
A little over a year.
Yeah, you're on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But like,
and this was too slow for my dad, too, because I remember when I did The Tonight Show, I remember going home in Compton. I just bought a Porsche Targa in cash, you know, and I'm driving it, and I take it over to the house, and my brother George goes, "Hey, that's a Cartman Ghia." And I said, "That's funny," and I used that. I went in there, I told my dad, I said, "Dad, you know, I'm going to be in The Tonight Show tonight." He goes, "What is that?" He said, "You know, it's Johnny Carson." They didn't ever watch it. I said, "Well, anyways," he said, "I'm going to be on it. It comes on at 12:30. It comes on at 11:30. Yeah, it comes on at 11:30. And I'm going to be on right around midnight. I'm the last guy on." And he goes, "For that? I'm going to stay up for that?" He goes, "Get a shirt in a decent hour. Nobody's watching that."
No offense, but your dad sounds like kind of an asshole.
He was. My dad was. Life was very hard to him. And he didn't want, you know, I was the only one of his kids that he put all his cookies in my basket. And I disappointed him, you know. But I was doing it for them, you know.
Yeah.
And he just didn't understand, you know. It was beyond his, he didn't know what that was.
Now, just for everybody who doesn't know, A.K.A. Pablo was a big deal, that show. Because, I mean, obviously it's a Norman Lear show.
It was groundbreaking. Back then, there were only really three networks. There's no cable, no nothing, no internet or nothing. And my show got canceled with a 28 share. Can you imagine what a 28 share would be today?
Dancing with the Stars.
My show got canceled with approximately maybe 14, 15 million viewers. You know, it got canceled.
Wow.
And they put something else. But what it did is it made me a name, and I was able to hit the clubs, you know. And I started working theaters way before I even had material.
Can I also just backtrack on that show real quick? I just want to point out that show is kind of like, in a way, like Seinfeld before Seinfeld, because it was about a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
With, putting in splices of stand-up and then like a show about friends and family.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, groundbreaking.
I'm glad you said that, because I wouldn't compare. Seinfeld is a very funny show in his own right, but if you can find a copy of my show and you look at it, somebody in that organization had seen it.
And it was also in...
It was about a stand-up. I would do my stand-up, and then I would act it out.
And A.K.A. Pablo was also kind of about nothing.
It was about nothing. It was just about a guy. Every day I had experiences.
Yeah.
I did 8 episodes. They only aired 7. And I went from being on the A-list, and I had a baby coming, being on the A-list, everything, to it got canceled, and the money just vanished. I've never been able to hold it. I was an easy touch. All my friends were broke, you know, so
sure.
I bought this house, and they all moved in, and my money was their money, and I had a great time. But at the end of the day, I was broke, and I had a baby coming, so... again, I said, how can I, you know, I didn't know about taxes, and I had $3.5 million, and I owed the government another million, and I was going, well, I had an accountant who was real cheesy. I tried to give my business to a Latino, and he turned out to be the worst thief. I didn't know nothing. Then I got this other accountant who just took pity on me. He says, look, man, here's what happened, blah, blah, blah. He threatened to sue the other accountant. He gave me some of my money back. I didn't want to go to court, and that kind of leveraged me out. My baby's coming. I wanted him to be born in a hospital with all the things that you want for your child. You know?
Sure.
Yeah,
so I just went back to the well, man. I remember my brother George, who's not known for his being so smart, but in the long run, he told me what was important. He said, go back and be funny, eh? What got you there will keep you there.
Now that's some solid advice.
I thought about that. I said, what got me there? What, you're funny. You know, do your thing on the stage. You know, it'll all come to you. You got nothing else. You got that. So I just went back to the well, man. I started to work on my material, take it serious, and then I started to get attention. And that led to Cheech and Chong. I met them. I did Born Again in East L.A., and boom, that was a hit. And Quicksilver came out later, and that was a hit. And then I just started to get movies, and then I just started to do this, you know. And so far, the pool's in, the patio's dry.
Let me ask you a question. But in your heart and soul, if you had to decide what you like doing better, is it stand-up or acting?
Absolutely, stand up. You know, I mean, I'm not a good actor. You know, I've done some things that I'm
me
proud
neither.
Of. I've done some things that I'm proud of. I've done some very horrible crap. some things that I did. I did G-Men from Hell.
Sounds awesome.
Coppola's kid directed that, and I just did it for the money. I played
not Sophia.
No,
the other kid,
the other guy, the untalented one. I shouldn't say that, but I don't care. Some things you do for the money. And
Nicholas Coppola, Nick Cage.
It was one of them.
I think with actor/comedians we've had on the couch here, that I think we're about 5-0 that they all say they prefer stand-up to acting.
Yeah, but there are
not as long of a day.
All the guys that I admire, you know, look at it this way. I think Pryor was a far funnier, not that funny, but Eddie Murphy in his own right is great. But Eddie Murphy is a way better actor, and I think Pryor was a better comic, better stand-up. I think they both agree if he was alive. But Pryor was never Pryor did acting out of necessity, you know, out of whatever. But he, you know, he got the big $40 million contract and all that. But stand-up was his thing. That was it. A guy like George Carlin has been in movies, but stand-up is his bread. That's what he does.
Sure.
So yeah. I wanted to be like that. I want to be not to compare myself with them, but I want to be stand-up. Everything else would just to keep the lights on or to whatever it is. You know, if Clint Eastwood comes up to you and offers you a job, what are you gonna say?
That's right. You were in a movie. You did that movie, Blood Work.
I did Blood Work.
He directed that, right?
He directed that. And you know, there's a critic that was very cruel to me from the San Diego Union Express, and he said, "This part should have gone to a talented actor. I can name 10. Why this guy and all that?" And I never read my reviews. I don't tout myself as an actor, but somehow this thing really stung because I didn't see the necessity for this because this idiot wasn't putting himself in my place. What did he expect me to do? Clint Eastwood offers me a job at $200,000 to hang out with him, and I'm going to go, no, don't give it to me. Call Andy Garcia. Call somebody. Don't you know I'm not a good... So I actually went over there to his office, and I go, I want you to explain to me what you mean by this? Are you surprised?
So you showed up to confront a critic?
You're damn right. I showed up to his office. And they let
give
me
it up
in.
For Paul Rodriguez.
The secretary said, "Whoa, you know, it's a starter." I went right to him, and I said, "Excuse me." And he looked up at me and goes, "Oh," like I was going to attack him or something like that. I said,
"He's like, you didn't bring Clint with you,
said,
did you?"
I said, "What are you talking about here? What am I supposed to do? What would you suggest? Somebody offers this part to me, I'm supposed to, I'd be a bigger idiot if I took your advice. If I said, hey, you know, Clint, that's very nice of you, but I'm not as talented as Andy or Vinicio Del Toro or Edward Olmos. There's no way, in my good conscience, I could accept this job. Do you think that's realistic, I told him? Is that sound realistic? Because this is what you're suggesting. This is what you're suggesting. I said, listen, your stuff is not only idiotic, but we both know, had Clint come up to you and said, I want you to play a half-assed twit reporter, you'd have took the job too. So next time, you know, I don't mind you criticizing that I suck as an actor, all these other things, but for me, that this job belonged to somebody else other than me, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, don't criticize the fact that you have a work ethic and you have a job and
it's
you like
to it's
work.
Like you walking up to somebody who won the lottery, you know, is exactly it, you know. Hey, man, you know, you won the lot. You don't deserve those millions of dollars. Well, fuck, Providence gave them to you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what are you going to give the money back because you don't deserve it, because you have low self-esteem? I was really upset because I could understand somebody criticizing on the merits of my work. You look at me, this guy's tall, hypey, he's not all that funny. You know, I have my bad days, you know? Judge me on the long run. Or if you see a movie of mine, he goes, hey, that wasn't all that good. You know, I didn't direct it. I'm not going to apologize for it. I did my best. And some of them I did. Some of them I didn't. You know.
Sure.
I can take that kind of criticism. But criticism should be constructive criticism. It should be like, here's what you can do. Here's what you're... But for somebody to say that you didn't deserve this part, who is he to tell you what you deserve? You know? So I remember letting it get to me. And you should never let it get to me because that's what they do it for. I just walked out of there. And about a year and a half later, he saw a picture that I did, and he gave me great reviews, and he mentioned that...
Like, I don't want this guy coming back.
Yeah, he, no, he, I had done this picture. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it was a small...
G-Men from Hell.
Yeah, G-Men from Hell. It was a small little, small little independent movie, and he liked it. And he didn't go overboard about it, but I think he saw the logic of what I was trying to get across. Perhaps I didn't use the best language, but I've always been... You know, when I'm passionate about something, as Caucasians say, my dander got up.
You get your dander up.
You know, I that's how I solve.
You're all in a tizzy.
Hey, we might just have to tussle.
You know, I belong to a couple of gangs. Whoever was winning in Compton, there's some vicious gangs too. And you know, we just you became a vato again. You just, you know, you wanted to take it as man to man. Go, hey, Hans, you know what I'm saying? You go over there, say you change his oil. You know what I'm doing? And you know, I just did that. You know, you were ready to throw down for what you believe if you didn't have the vocabulary, and that's really why a lot of fights happen. Well, I had both; I just didn't have no brains.
And I have to say, when I was like a teenager, you were a constant presence on TV, movies. You were everywhere. So you were a hardworking guy. So I can understand what you get upset about.
I did. I worked hard, and I have a big family, brothers and sisters, and I made sure that they were taken care of. You know, I didn't know how long it would last, but I was working incessantly. I was working, and I took care of them, bought some properties, bought some land, and they were living there for theirs, you know. And then my mother died, and she was everything to me. She was just absolutely everything I did. I did for my father, I did do for my brother and sister, I did for her. And when she died, I just didn't want to do it anymore. I couldn't get up. I went through this deep depression. There was no reason for me to do anything, you know. I didn't care that my mortgage was gone, lost everything. I began to drink a lot, you know. I was drinking a lot. I went through a horrible depression. I didn't want to do anything, you know, for years, almost a year and a half. I'd be off for shows, and I just couldn't do it. I remember sold out show in Chicago at the theater, and I just walked off, and the promoter sued me.
You're kidding me. Like, you walked off? Like, how far into the show?
I was 10 minutes into the show, and I just...
You just weren't feeling it, huh?
I just apologized, and I'm sorry. I can't tell you why or what, but I can't do it today. Sorry. I just put the microphone down, walked out, and they were going, what? You know, they came to my the room where I was at, the promoter. I said, listen, you know, do what you got to do, but if you continue to insult me, you pick the right guy. I will fight your ass. I'll beat your ass if I have to. Not a violent guy, but I wanted to get beat up, I guess, or I wanted to hit something. It's hard to explain what depression is.
Yeah.
Psychologists, whatever it is, I didn't go to that. I don't know, Mexicans, we don't believe in that. I guess we think that, you know, we're not going to pay somebody to know the most intimate things about us. So I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't do it with drugs. I just went back to the ranch. And again, my brother George, you know, I was drinking, I was just hanging out, I just wanted to die, really, you know. My brother George, again, he's no genius, but he came up to me and goes, do me a favor, go in the house, get a gun, blow your brains out, and just die, stop this suffering, because you're killing us. We don't know what to do with you, we don't know how to help you, we don't know your business, we don't know anything, so just end it right now. Here, go get the gun, just put it right under your chin and blow yourself, because I don't know, I'll bury you, and then we're done with it, because you're killing all of us, we don't know what to do.
I kind of want to interview George.
No, really. You say he's not a genius, but I kind of think he is.
Yeah, George is pretty slick.
My brother George was a tough dude. My brother George, he looked just like Canelo Alvarez. You know that boxer?
Yeah.
He boxed himself, and I never saw him lose. That's how bad he was. He was just knocking dudes out, and he was very macho. Today, you wouldn't know that he was like that. He's just a fat, diabetic guy who's my heart. And, you know, I stopped, and I just... He woke me up, you know. I went, what the hell am I going to do, man? So I just sobered up, you know, quit drinking. And
that helped, huh?
Went back, like I said, you know, what got you there will keep you there. And I went over there, and then I got involved with the political, the water rights of California. We passed that bill. But in the meantime, Hollywood forgot about me, and I diminished. I was on TV a lot, and I diminished. And it was hard to, you know... About 3 years ago, I started the water bill passed. Schwarzenegger appointed me to the California Film Commission, and I said, "All right, I kept my word to the farmers. Now I'm gonna get back in it." And here I am trying to look for a second.
You're a very giving man.
I'm broke. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're in Rochester. We figured, but
well, you know, well, I'm in Rochester.
Well, we're hoping when you get some money back, maybe you'll buy us a ranch.
Well, you know, you have to grow titties, and that's possible.
Check.
Yeah. Vinny's got that.
Are these
covered.
Big enough? Yes, I think you will. You know, it's
I'll shave the hair.
it's a trajectory. Sometimes I think about you know, to be funny. Sometimes you have to go through a lot of pain, I guess, you know.
I don't think it's sometimes.
I think it creates perspective for comics.
I don't know if it's necessary, but I have noticed that when I was living fat, it made me lazy, you know.
Sure.
I remember Pryor saying that, somebody asked him, and I was in the vicinity, I heard, he said that the hardest thing to do is to get out of a hot tub when you have three naked girls and hop in your car and go down to make three drunks laugh. But unless you do that, you'll lose those three girls and everything else.
Oh, don't I know a story of my life.
So I got what he got.
Couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you.
Green button, I guess you have to have a love for your craft. You know, you've seen Chappelle go through it, and you've seen people go through this thing, and when they find themselves, and they go back to the well, which is a microphone and an audience, you know, you just get out there, and if you don't deviate too far from the truth, the jokes are there. The comedy is there, and that's what I'm trying to do now, you know?
Well,
I just try to do that.
Folks, you could see Paul Rodriguez four more shows this weekend.
If you want to.
You want to.
This is my retirement now. You know?
You're doing
welcome
a shit.
To my farewell
you're
tour.
You're doing a shit job of retiring.
I'm George Lopez. I'm a cover boy. I'm a cover comic for a.
You should do the Elton John 3-year plan for retirement.
I think George.
I didn't
Lopez
get to tell
you
my boy story.
Oh, let's do that. Oh, yeah, absolutely do that. But before I do, reminder: get your tickets now, carlsoncomedy.com, or call 585-4-COMEDY to get your tickets to Paul Rodriguez. Paul walked in there and he saw this picture we have hanging in the studio of David Bowie's mugshot. That's a famous picture, and he was arrested right here in Rochester for weed.
Well, and he knows. He's a good guy.
Sure.
I don't know who David Bowie is from Adam, right? I mean, my music was Santana and Mariachi and Mexican and Salsa, you know?
Sure.
Tito Puente, that's what I was in. I don't know who this guy is. But my roommate at the time, Jesse Aragon, may God rest his soul, he's an actor. He was in a movie called... He was in Hollywood Shuffle with Robert Townsend, you know, a classic movie. He was in Bonnie Bedelia's Heart Like a Wheel. His career was just coming up, and he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. But anyways, he's my best friend in the world, and he was drinking too much, and he stopped. He went to AA and went to his meeting there in Hollywood, and wouldn't you know it, David Bowie was his sponsor. I don't know David from nothing, right? So we have this apartment in the ghetto on Western.
Can I just ask what year this is? I just want to find out if he had like a lightning bolt painted on his face at the AA meetings.
I don't know, but I know that the song "Put on Your Red Shoes" came out about a month after that, right?
Okay, so anyways, like 80s-ish.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're living on Western and Vermont at the corner of Crack and Hoe Street. You know, very very seedy part of town.
Crack and Hoe Boulevard.
Hoe Boulevard.
Let me look that up on Waze
and
right
this,
now.
This limo pulls up, and out steps a dude with a lime green, looks like a gay leprechaun. I don't know what lime green suit. These shoes and a glitterous thing, and full on makeup, you know. And he goes, I didn't even know he's coming from me. It's Hollywood. You see a lot of freaks.
Not with limos though.
Nothing. Everything is fair game there.
All right.
But knocks on the door. And he's got the wrong place. He goes, "Can I help you?" He goes, "Oh, this is Jesse Erica, dude." And I'm going, because Jesse had the eclectic friends. I go, "No, he's not here, but he lives here. This is that." And I said, "Yeah, he's here. He should be long. Do you want to come in and wait for him?" He goes, "Yeah, it's right." And he comes in our place. filthy, nasty roaches, whatever it is, you know. I offer him something to drink, and he goes, no, thank you. And he had his own little, mineral water, whatever is there. I don't know what to talk to him about, and I guess he found the fact that I wasn't.
Then you had still had no idea who he was.
I left him in the living room. I went to my bedroom, and I'm over there, and he's he's waiting, you know, making noises. I come out, I said, yeah. He's been many longer. There's no cell phones at the time.
Right.
I said, he'll be here when he's here, you know. And he's there waiting.
I don't fucking know David Bowie. I don't know when he's going to be here.
I don't know. And ultimately, I think he waited about 20, 25 minutes, and then he goes, excuse me. I'm laying in my bed, you know, watching porn, or I don't know what the hell I was doing. He goes, don't mean to bother you. And I said, he goes, look, can you tell him that I'm David Bowie? And I go, how you spell that? I don't know what Rocky thinks I'm living. So he wrote this note down, and
that note's probably worth a couple bucks.
I should have kept it. I don't know where it is. It was around the house for a while. Jesse was showing it to everybody, so it'll turn up one day. I have a feeling, but anyways, he left, right? And about an hour later or so, Jesse comes in. Him and his girlfriend is dating this black stripper. Annoying, just annoying. Not because she was black or she was a stripper, she was just an annoying bitch, really. And comes in, and I said, hey, some freak dude came here looking for you. He left a note over there. And I'm in my room, he reads the note and he screams, ah! I said, what the fuck's wrong with you? You guys fighting? He goes, they used to fight all the time. He goes, was he here? What did he look like? So I explained to him, he goes, you know who that is? Do you know who that is? I said, man, I don't know, David Boy from Gym Boy, you know, I don't know anything about him. And he begins to explain to me, you know, he takes out an album, I play Ziggy, and it wasn't my music, and he just, he's trying to tell me, convince to turn me into a fan right away.
Right.
I don't know, he just listened to hard rock and all that shit, you know. So, I don't know what that is. About a month later, Red Shoes comes out as a big hit, and it was a catchy tune. And he goes, that's him, that's the guy that was here, and still, I like that song, but I
not impressed.
Not impressed, right? And when he played the Forum, and the Forum or the anyways over there, Jesse was all excited. He calls up, he can't get a hold of him, and he had started drinking or whatever it was, and he wanted to drag me out there. I'm like, I was, you know, dude in a lime green suit. It was just he's David Bowie, whatever. Now at my age, after seeing his documentary on Netflix. And, I realized he was a genius and
yeah.
A lot of music, whether it's my favorite or not. Dude, I ignore David Bowie, and I'm sure he was idolized by a lot of things, but I'm sure he'd remember me. I'm sure
because of your disgusting house and how you ignored him.
I'm the guy that left him there, you know. I remember he was very uncomfortable because he was very fastidious. You know? And I'm over there. I'm kind of upset that Jesse's inviting these kinds of people to the house. I live in a shithole.
If he was my AA sponsor, I'd be relapsing constantly so that he'd come over to the house.
You know,
David, I'm thinking about drinking again. I got a couple friends over here.
And then I'd be, hey, guys, watch this.
In all fairness to when my friend Jesse was killed on a motorcycle on the 10 freeway, he showed up.
To the funeral?
Yeah.
Showed up. Wow.
Big roses, and Townsend paid for it, and Robert Townsend paid for his coffin. I tried to give what I can, but again, I was flat ass broke. You know. It was very hard. Jesse Aragon was such a good guy, but something about me, you know, getting old is you lose a lot of your contemporaries, you know, they hit hard, you know. It was like Robin was a big, he was such a good guy, man. I did several shows with him, and such a generous guy, and Richard Jenny, man, I put him on the Young Comedian.
That was a rough one.
Yeah. We were two nights before, he was over at my house. We're drinking a beer by the pool, and in hindsight, he was saying goodbye. I didn't get it at the time. He was like, "Hey, Pablo," he used to call me Pablo. "Hey, Pablo, thanks, man. You was always very nice to me, man. I want to thank you." I said, "Yeah, man. Anytime. What are you talking about? You're one of the funniest guys."
Have a beer, yeah.
You know, we're drinking beer, and he goes, "I just want you to know from here that you know you're a great guy." And I go, what are you, fat? What do you want to do? What are you talking about? I'm a great guy. Well, you know, and it didn't dawn on me until morning after that. I get a call from Jamie Masada saying that he had taken a shotgun and blew his head off. It was devastating, you know, because it all made sense. But you know, I don't want to bum everybody out, but that's these things make you either collapse or make you stronger, man. So Mitch Mullaney, you know, he was another guy that I knew well. Just devastating, you know. We have a fraternity, and whether you like a comic or you're fighting a comic, when one of us goes, one thing's guaranteed. We're going to have a service for you at one of the clubs. It'll be attended by your worst enemies or your best friends, and we all sit there. We're going to talk shit about you, especially if you commit suicide. And it's a given, you know. It's a given. And,
yeah, because we're all in this together.
People, you know, in the military get like the 12-gun salute. And in comedy,
we roast
the corpse.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, I'm not looking forward to mine. I won't be there. But Rodney Dangerfield was one of the most celebrity attended films I've ever seen. Everybody loved Rodney, and he showed a video. I was lucky enough to be one of the ones who spoke, and he said, "Hey, if you're watching this, things didn't go well."
I'm going to make a note on that.
That is
for my
classic. Don't steal Rodney Dangerfield's last joke. I mean, what kind of piece of crap are you?
I'm the kind of piece of crap that would steal Rodney Dangerfield's last joke.
Because it was the guys that spoke was myself, Saget, who else? It was Stiller, Mirror. Only five of us. Joan Dangerfield asked to talk and say something. And Lennox was the most concise. He said, "Yeah, Rodney was a great guy. You love Rodney. And it's too bad that he had to die to give Bob Saget a job, you know?"
See, that's the kind of funeral people should want to have. One where you can just make fun of everybody in the room and it's lighthearted.
But it's a very tight fraternity, you know. You can only get in by being doggedly determined to what you do, you know, taking it serious. And once you get accepted, back then it was doing the Tonight Show. That was the litmus test. That was the mark. I don't know what it takes now, but it's still it's more encompassing. You know, there's guys that are like the hottest guy in Rochester or the hottest whatever, and they're able. You know, you got to gamble. You got to be able to let that go and then become a small fish in Los Angeles, you know, and if you really got the goods, it'll happen for you, and if you don't, you can always go back to Rochester, you know. Not that I'm putting this city down, but I'm in perspective.
Oh, sure, man. Yeah. This isn't the entertainment capital of the world by any stretch. Yeah, you
know? It isn't?
Paul, no, you're Paul, what's Paul going
Myra,
on.
Palmyra is
yeah.
Yeah, that's where the Mormons started.
Palmyra. If I do good here, I'm there next at the Comedy Yucks. At the Comedy Works, you know.
So, Paul Rodriguez, thank you so much for coming.
Look for my new book. You know, it takes a village idiot. I'm publishing it soon.
When is it coming out?
It's not. I'm just bullshitting.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, you can check out my new book, Gullible Idiot.
Paul, people wrote that book already.
Yeah. No fooling. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, man. Thanks for the airtime. I know I babble on. And,
no, we love.
You
know, we.
I got to be honest with you.
As long as it's interesting, babble all you want.
You're a very honest, open guy, and I find that refreshing, because a lot of people, you know, they don't like to talk about the narrative of their lives, and you know what? There's a lot of lessons to be learned from that.
There is, you know, because I'm sentimental, and, you know, I cry easy, and I live hard. I wouldn't change my life if I had to do it all over again. I mean, just the people I've met, the proximity of greatness, really, you know. To be among guys that, even at the time as I met them, you just knew, man. There's just an aura about. I remember seeing Jim Carrey the first time he went on stage. He just destroyed the room. I've never seen a standing ovation like that. He's probably one of the greatest entertainers. I'm saddened to see that he doesn't do stand up.
I gotta wonder. You think he's gonna? Because, like, you know, he just did that show about stand-up. There's got to be something going on in his head where he misses it.
I don't know. I've not seen him in a long time. I sure wish he would. There's early tape of him that I saw many times. You know, I remember us going to read for movies together and hanging out. And I remember one time we used to go to Ben Frank's, and he wondering if he could, if he was ever going to have enough money to buy a car. And we all said, oh yeah, we will. And I read somewhere he bought a second plane and all that. And call me fucker.
Yeah, well, he listens, so you know.
Well, you're sitting here telling stories about famous, about your proximity to greatness. There's someone out there telling stories about having met you.
Us when you leave.
Yeah, yeah. Probably some waitress. You know, some waitress will be saying, "I remember he took his pecker out and it was big."
Me too.
No, all the sexual harassment, you know, coming out. I'm not worried about that. I've been trying to spread rumors about my sexual prowess, but it was a different time, you know. It was a different time. I'm not condoning that kind of behavior, but the kind of debauchery I saw, you know, was ridiculous. But you know, if the walls at the Comedy Store could talk, they'd mumble. Excuse me, pardon me. Excuse me.
I didn't see anything.
Hey, what are you doing? Is somebody talking to you, or some girl servicing them? That was new to me. I mean, I'm a Catholic guy, and. Well, you sure you don't want me to come? Like, no, it's all right, Go, hey, watch it. You're biting. Look, you know, it's just things that you see that you just. I would never write a book about that because it'd be betraying the confidence. But I know there's a lot of nervous people out there. A lot of nervous people.
You think? Like the last couple months in Hollywood have got to be something different.
There's a difference between when you use your fame or you have power over somebody, your employees. I think that's wrong if they're employees or you have something hanging over them. I mean, who wants to get laid like that? You might as well get a prostitute or something like that, you know. That is mental rape, if not physical. But if it's a willing thing, she has, you know, there's nothing you can do to affect her career or their career. You're not doing it for that reason. You know, le bon temps roulé, you know. I mean, what the hell? It's just...
Live and let live.
Yeah, you know, and... There's a, you know, all I think a lot of young, beautiful young ladies who were Miss Rutabaga of wherever they plant those things went to Hollywood. The best job to get was at the Comedy Store. I mean, a lot of them married comics who became successful, you know, and that's the way it is. I met my son's mom on the set, and I met the other son's mom there. So, you know, I think when it's a mutual thing, but I don't. I think women have the right to say no, and no means no. It doesn't mean maybe. It doesn't, you know, it means no. And I don't believe you have to roofie them out or anything like that. And
so you were hanging around in the 70s. I mean, those.
I saw things like that. I remember. I won't say who, but he's a pretty well-known guy.
Does his name rhyme with Il Osby?
I took him off of this passed-out girl. I said, what the fuck, are you crazy? Man, get out of here, you know? And
no shit. Will you tell me off air who it was?
He's about to do this. This, you know, she's passed out, man. Look at her. So what? I said, look at her, man. She's not able to give consent. He goes, oh, come on, man. She's a whore. I said, well, you ain't gonna fuck her while I'm here, you know. That doesn't make me a hero. That just
makes you a human with compassion.
Yeah. I would figure, you know, I got sisters. Would you like your sister be in that situation?
No.
You know, I'd kill a motherfucker, you know. So, but they're on the other hand, there are. There are girls who will do who will give you permission for that, and that's their thing, you know. So each case is, I mean, I don't even know how I got into this tangent.
Can I ask not a loaded question, but just a serious question? Yeah. I mean, you've been around the comedy scene forever. You know everybody. I mean, I just want to know, because on a scale of 1 to 10, how well would you say in the comedy community the rumors about Bill Cosby stuff? Would you say it was like everybody knew it was a thing, or
we're all hypocrites? We all knew. Everybody knew. We didn't know how.
I heard about it in the 2000s.
Oh, I remember. I did a show where he was at, and I really didn't like his. He was arrogant. He was an arrogant man. He was a high almighty above everything, and I didn't care for him. And
America's dad.
I'm sure he didn't care for me, but I was funnier than he was that night, and he had this. How the mighty have fallen, you know. I mean, I know he went through the pain of his son being killed. I mean, who would wish that on anybody? But we all knew. Everybody knew a waitress or girl or somebody who this had happened to them. You know, he'd take this young lady, And she'd come back, and she'd be, you know, he promised him jobs on the show and all this other stuff. And I think this was it was about time. And you know, and when Burris started to do that, we all admired his balls. It wasn't, you know, it's one that we didn't know, but it wasn't my place to go up there and do that. But I do believe you know, nobody gets out of this world without paying for what they've done. You know,
karma's a real thing.
Sooner or later, you're gonna get yours. You know, and the higher you are, the harder you fall. And imagine, for all his good works and all his generosity to Temple University, when his day comes, he would only be remembered as a rapist, which is what
he
is.
Yeah.
You know, and, you make that bed, you sleep in it.
He's gonna have the Scarlet R.
You know, I mean, my penis couldn't rape anyone. If somebody accused me, I'd just go before the judge and go, "Your Honor, Exhibit A." You know, I haven't had an erection since the Jimmy Carter administration.
He was none too happy that
yes,
day.
Right. But, you know, there's a lot of things I'm not proud of, but not those things.
Awkward moment on the Rose Garden. Yeah.
How do you? I mean, while we're talking about this, do you feel like Hollywood's going to change their practices with this? Do you feel like
they've gotten overboard? I mean, what's a guy supposed to? I mean, Latinos especially. I mean, we whistle and holler at women. That's part in our. This is in our genes. That's how we say, "Mamita, you're looking good. Baby, look at that. Look at that ass." You know. Well, I mean, we're not touching. We're talking, right?
Right.
When you want to get laid, what am I supposed to do? Give you a resume? You know, here's my resume. Give me yours. May I grab your breasticle bag? Can I cup it? Can, you know,
didn't Chappelle do that
awkward.
Famous
awkward, you know?
that famous sketch on a show was like the consent sheet, like we'll go for
exactly.
Light fondling,
that's exactly
like an order form.
It was when he said it. I don't try to watch other comics because you know
sure.
you don't want to do this stuff, but you know it's true. It's true. What are we supposed to do now? I think the only women really complaining are real feminists. You know what I mean? I mean, women that don't even like men. You know, I think, you know,
or women who've been raped or abused.
and that is wrong. I'm not defending
sure.
that. But there has to be. It's gone way too far to the other side. You know, and I think they only complain when the guy is ugly. You know, if the guy is ugly, an ugly man can say anything to you. You can take it wrong. But you know. There's a lot of George Clooney comes and taps you in the ass. You're not gonna call HR or complain.
Well, I mean, you could bring up guys like Casey Affleck.
Well, there you go. You know, I mean,
I just want to go on record to say George Clooney can slap my ass anytime he wants.
George Clooney,
totally fine.
You can sexual ass anyone in this room.
I think that's the most important takeaway from this
Clooney.
Conversation.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant to say. That if Clooney cups you and he wants to give you a wedgie. You are just damn grateful, then.
Even if you work for him.
let him
give you a wedgie.
Yes. Don't complain. Just be happy it happened to
just
you.
Just tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Can we take a picture while you're giving me the wedgie?
Yeah. You know, it's such a different world now, you know. Such a different world. I don't know where we're going, but it'll all sort itself out. It's like when they say the stock market's down, it'll have its correction, you know, because... Because boys, men are going to be men, and women are going to be women, and then the only way to reproduce is to bump uglies, you know, and that's what you got to do.
Let's all just agree to be humans together.
Let's all agree to bump uglies as often. When you get to be my age, when your tool doesn't work, know that it did.
Wiggle your ugly.
For a long time.
Wave it at people.
All you got is memories. You know? That's at the end of life, that's really all you have is memories, and hopefully they're good ones.
What was that? What was that piece of advice George gave you one more time?
What got you there will keep you there.
There it is.
There it is.
So I'm here. I'm here in Rochester. The road to my comeback goes right through the center of this town. Then it goes right through Palmyra. It's going to make a left in Denver.
Get an omelet.
And then, you know, once again,
hack and sack.
I'll be able to reach the kind of stardom where I can be an asshole again. And right now I'm humbled. So, who knows,
eh? I'll tell you what, in 10 years, in 5 years, he won't do this show.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I'm alive.
And he wouldn't have done the show 10 years ago. So, you know, it's even...
But
so
now
it's,
that I'm broken in the middle of a lawsuit,
we're glad we caught you at a good time.
Hopefully we caught you on the upswing-ish? Yeah. Upswing-ish?
I still feel I'm falling, but who knows? Maybe the public shows up tonight... I'll be able to pay my mortgage.
In 5 years, you're going to say, it's me telling that Bowie story on that weird podcast in Rochester that got me back.
Yeah, you know, My career was in the shitter. Then I went on that podcast and I told that boy story and damn it, the phones lit up. We didn't even have phones. The phones lit up at that place where they invented the microphone, that building where Edison banged a waitress.
That's the one.
That's the one.
That's us. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. You are a great audience, and you have wonderful taste in podcasts, may I say that. We really appreciate you. We love you. We hope you come see Paul Rodriguez this weekend at Comedy
Look,
Carlson.
Don't make me beg.
We demand you come and see
The man has a mortgage.
I got a mortgage and an ex-old lady who's Cuban. Who?
And a
Mexicans on steroids.
Subscribe on YouTube. Leave a review on iTunes. We'll see you next week. Thank you. Good night.